Greetings, you beautiful humans. This is Glenn Klein online. It's a beautiful day for baseball, as it always is in the Tampa Bay region, or almost always. Certainly always inside Tropicana Field. And it's always a beautiful day to talk baseball with our guest today, the legendary broadcaster, the voice of the Tampa Bay Rays, Hall of Fame nominee, and I know he is going to eventually land in Cooperstown. Please welcome online Mr. Dwayne Statz. Dwayne!
Hey, it's great to hear you. How are you?
I am doing wonderfully, and as many of our loyal listeners will agree with, I am ready for baseball. Are you ready for your season yet?
Yeah, you know, we're going to, it's spring training, and we're going to work our way into it. We don't want to peak too soon, you know. I mean, we don't want to leave anything in spring training. It's all, when the season starts for real, we want to be completely ready then. So we're pacing ourselves.
I hear that. Well, the players obviously have a month to get ready for the season in earnest. They're training year-round now. How long does it take for a broadcaster to truly be ready for the regular season?
Well, the short answer to that this year with a makeover of this club and especially the bullpen, you know, we're going to have to spend time getting to know the candidates and the guys who eventually wind up in that bullpen. The truth of the matter is that it's an ongoing process. I like to try to keep myself updated during the winter on things that are going on with, you know, not only the Rays, but all the clubs, so that you go in having an idea, and then fine-tuning that. And there's some of that to be had with this club because of the openings that that we find they have in the bullpen. So so it's, you know, it'll be a little bit more of a learning curve this spring than it has been the last two or three springs, but you know, we've been there before, and we'll be ready when the season begins, and we'll have a pretty good idea of the capabilities of those guys out there in the bullpen.
Well, you mentioned the last two or three years, and of course, the Rays have won arguably the toughest division, not only in baseball, but perhaps in all of sport, in the American League East. When you talk about having defeated in the regular season the Boston Red Sox and the New York Yankees two out of the 3 years, that is really a monumental achievement for this small market ball club.
Yeah, it's a great achievement. There's no question about that. And you know, but because they're in a market the size of Tampa Bay and in Florida, I think it probably has not received the kind of acclaim that it ordinarily would have. I think what they've done over the last 3 years in the American League East is certainly in the same neighborhood, for example, as what the 1969 New York Mets did. It's some incredible stuff here. I mean, the Mets winning that year and having that kind of season was legendary, largely because it was, number one, a great accomplishment, and number two, in such a large market. But what this team has done, not only over a period of 1 year in 08 and going to the World Series, but to compete year in and year out in the American League East with behemoths like the Yankees and the Red Sox, and you know, a couple of other teams in the Blue Jays and the Orioles. The Orioles have spent some money and have not performed the way they'd like. But I think you're onto something there. I think it's a great baseball story that has received some acclaim, but as baseball stories go, what's happened here in the East with this club has been nothing short of spectacular, really.
You talked about the bullpen, Dwayne, and we're going to talk about that. But the two missing ingredients from the 2008 team that went to the World Series, the 2010 team that lost in the playoffs to the Rangers but also won the American League East, there's two players that are now with the Boston Red Sox that were with us during those two out of 3 years, all 3 years, of course, Carl Crawford and a guy you're pretty familiar with, a guy named Dan Wheeler. Are the Rays going to be able to replace Crawford and Wheeler and Pena?
Well, I think those three guys you mentioned, and I think coming off of last year's club, Soriano, certainly was a major factor, and so was Benoit. I mean, those are five very significant pieces of any puzzle that a club will try to put together. And Crawford, he pretty much speaks for himself. And you mentioned Dan Wheeler, of course, there's obviously a family connection there. And I think what Dan gave this club, he was the first guy that they, in their case, reacquired. But he was the first guy they brought back to try to establish a bullpen in the second half of 07. He was a veteran guy who had been to the World Series. He had been in a couple of postseasons before he came back here. And he established a great work ethic by example. He was not a big vocal guy, but he was a pros pro, really. And as they tried to reestablish, or really establish, the mindset for the first time here, a winning mindset, I think he was the first piece of that puzzle. And because he was versatile in the bullpen, he filled a lot of different roles down there that helped stabilize this pitching staff. And then when you put Soriano and Benoit together, I think that's those are significant losses for this club. And I'm not sure that it would be fair to pinpoint trying to replace any of those people specifically on the shoulders of one or two players. For an example, Desmond Jennings, he's got a chance to be a very good Major League Baseball player, but somehow to say that he's going to step in to Crawford's role, I think that would be a disservice.
All right, well,
to Crawford
let's take
Jennings.
A look. Absolutely. But let's take a look at the pieces that the Rays have put in place for this year compared to what, and leaving the bullpen aside, and I do want to get into that because I think that was the biggest difference between 2009 and 2010, obviously, was Benoit and Soriano. But do you think between Johnny Damon and Manny Ramirez, which were the Rays' two biggest pickups in the offseason, and Desmond Jennings, that the three of them can replace the production that the Rays saw, especially out of Carl Crawford, but also Carlos Pena with his home run bat?
I think they have a chance to maybe give this lineup a little more balance than it had. Crawford, it's difficult, I think, in any way, shape, or form, to replace him, not only what he did offensively in the lineup, but what he did defensively. And people think of him as a base stealer and an offensive player, but what he gave this club every day defensively was a big lift to every pitcher who went to the mound. And so that's going to be a challenge. Now, we're not sure what that outfield is going to look like, and we're not even sure if Desmond Jennings is going to break camp with the club. There's a chance that he could wind up starting the year at Durham. So the configuration of the offense is going to be a little different. They're not going to have that burst of blinding speed that Crawford had. But I think I think Manny Ramirez has a chance here to give Longoria protection, maybe more protection than he's had. And I think Ramirez is motivated at this point in his career, and he's shown that in the early part of spring training. He's shown up early. His work ethic has been good. And if, you know, Manny's going to be Manny, you know, it's Manny being Manny.
Well, here's the question. What is the over and under in the amount of games into the regular season until Manny actually becomes Manny?
Well, I think that there's a good chance that he's going to do something that's going to be colorful or controversial or all of that. But the point I was going to make is that if you talk to teammates and managers who've had him, the guy puts in a good day's work, particularly from the offensive side. Now, the Rays are talking about running him out there occasionally in left field, and he's kind of excited about that. But he's here to produce runs and be a strong right-handed bat. And I think there's a lot of motivation for him to do that at this point in his career.
Yeah, I wonder if Joe Maddon and the Rays learned something from the disaster that was Pat Burrell, who went back to the National League and produced for the world champion San Francisco Giants and obviously never did anything as strictly a designated hitter here in Tampa. And I'm wondering if keeping Manny somewhat involved on the defensive end might keep his bat a little bit more lively on the offense.
Well, I think any time a guy's completely involved, he's better off. In Burrell's case, you know, he had never been a DH. He had always been in the National League and had been a player on both sides of the baseball. And I think that affected him. And I also think that I think he wound up in a league, you know, the dominance of the American League has been pretty evident. And I think he found himself trying to learn a new league at a time that was late in his career. And I think he was trying to DH, and he had never done that. And I think he probably faced better arms than he had faced at times in the National League. And so weigh all three of those as you will, but I think they all factored into the reason he struggled here. And I think Manny, first and foremost, Manny's an offensive guy. He's DH before. He's played in the outfield as well. And I think the more you can keep him engaged, the better off you are. But I just think that he is determined to show people that maybe some of those pitches that got by him over the last year or so would be an anomaly, and that he can still turn on those pitches and be a productive run producer. And so I think that's where he's coming from at this point. I think it's personal and professional pride, and he's shown in the early parts of the spring that, and over the off season, that he's willing to work to get himself back to that point.
This is Glenn Klein Online. We're talking with Dwayne Stats, the voice of the Tampa Bay Rays. A little baseball preseason preview, and glad to have you along for the ride. All right, so obviously we're missing Wheeler. We're missing Soriano. We're missing Benoit. And see, I can say we because I don't cover the team professionally. So I am a fan, as you know. Maddon has said that they're going to go into the season with closer by committee, and I have never seen a team be able to compete on a high level without an upfront closer. I really believe the difference between 2009 and 2010 was Rafael Soriano. Obviously, Benoit was huge. Even Troy Percival closing for much of the season in 2008, and his presence in the bullpen, as well as Dan Wheeler's presence in the bullpen, as you said, by attitude and be able to come in and be a setup man. This is my biggest concern, Dwayne, and I don't see, I mean, Kyle Farnsworth, to me, being from Chicago, having seen him pitch with the White Sox, or with the Cubs, rather, with the Yankees, I don't think that's the answer. What's your sense?
Yeah, well, they're looking for answers. There's no question. And what they have in camp, and Farnsworth might be the poster child for this. He's had a great arm his entire career. But I think reasonable people could agree that he's probably underachieved what he had hoped and what a lot of people had hoped would be the case for him. Now, he leads the charge this spring in that bullpen. If you graded out the arms they have this spring, they may have stronger arms down there than they did over the last couple of years in the bullpen. The problem is, you got to be able to make a pitch with that strong arm. And that's the challenge that will face this bullpen. How many of those guys will have consistent command and be able to make a pitch when they need to make a pitch? And to me, that's what it's all going to come down to. They have some healthy arms, but are they refined arms? And that's something that that we saw last year out of almost all those guys in the bullpen. And that's why Benoit, who'd always had a strong arm, but he was able to make pitches last year, really for the first time in his career consistently. That made him a great guy out of the bullpen. So what they're hoping is that they can find, out of a group of strong arms down there, a couple of guys who can settle in and consistently make pitches. I agree with you on the closer by committee. I think it's a very difficult way to win a division. You know, they're talking about, Madden was talking about winning 90 games. The computer gurus have said this team should win 84. Madden says if you win 90, you can win a couple more, and that could be enough to get you into the postseason. And I think as a manager of this club, I think that's a good way to go for him. I mean, he's got to set the bar with the idea of winning the division, winning 90-plus games, getting to the postseason. If he were saying something other than that, he's probably not doing his job. But they're going to have to get some consistency out of the bullpen, and I think eventually someone will have to emerge. The guy I like, and they're trying to be very coy with him, is Jake McGee. I think McGee is a closer waiting to happen. I think for a couple of reasons they're being very close to the vest with him. One is they don't want to put a young guy in a situation that's consistently packed with pressure, and if he doesn't succeed to the level that he would like to, you're always concerned about the impact on his entire career, frankly. And the other side of that is I'm not so sure that that they want to open the season with him on the major league roster. I think part of that has to do with how long they'll be able to retain his services. I think they feel that he could close, he could be a valuable member of this organization for a long time. And their question is, do they want to have him spend major league time early in this year when they're not sure what the results will be? So do they want a guy eating up major league time with potentially mixed results when if they make sure he's ready when they bring him up, then they are maximizing his major league time that he could spend in a Rays uniform and they could control him contractually? So I think all of those things go into the mix when they're making a decision on Jake McGee. But for me, if this club shows that it has the ability to contend and there's one guy who could emerge as the consistent closer, it would be Jake McGee.
You talked about the effect because he is such an inexperienced major leaguer that early season struggles might have for him and why he might start out at Durham. You've obviously been around Major League Baseball for most of your adult life, and having a son-in-law, the aforementioned Dan Wheeler, in the family as a reliever, you probably have gained insight about what it takes mentally to come into a game in that kind of situation. From your discussions with Dan, Dwayne, and just through your general experience, how psychological is relief pitching?
Oh, I think it's a major part of that. Obviously, physically, you have to be healthy, and you have to have major league stuff, and you have to have major league command. But, you know, there are a lot of guys who physically have had the ability to perform at the major league level, and they do not perform successfully, and it gets down to the psychological side. And I think one of any relief pitcher's strength, and I think Dan has had this, you know, you're making a pitch. Every pitch that you're making, there has to be some design to it. You're trying to execute a pitch. And so if you make a pitch and it's not in the location where you want, or maybe you didn't get the call that you thought you should get, you can't spend one nanosecond fretting over that pitch because now you have to make another pitch. And I think what he's done with the ability that God has given him is he's gone from one pitch to the next, concentrating on the pitch that he's supposed to make. And so you get into situations where maybe a ball falls in, or, you know, you think you hit the corner and the umpire didn't think you hit it. Well, immediately after that pitch is called a ball, he has to go back and think about the very next pitch he's going to make, and he does a great job at that. And I think that's where the mental acumen and the concentration and the discipline sometimes, well, more than sometimes, I think it always makes the difference between a guy who has a major league career and a guy who doesn't have a major league career.
And a guy who can compete on a championship level, as Dan has done. How emotional was it for you guys with him having to leave Tampa and go to Boston for, as a family?
Well, I think, you know, we've been around the game long enough to know the realities of the game, and that there are changes that occur. From a personal end, the great thing is that, of course, they live here in this market, and they literally live 5 minutes down the street from us, and they will continue to do that. That's going to be their home. They're going to raise their three children there. They're going to school here, and so when school is out, they'll be spending 7 or 8 weeks in Boston. We'll make a couple of trips up there during that period just to play the Red Sox, to see them. So that'll be great. And when the off season comes, you know, when school starts again, the boys are back in school, and so they're going to be here. So it's great to know that.
Well, we have some inside information, though. We have almost a sure bet that the Red Sox are going to make it to the World Series, don't we?
Well, here's the deal. They just added they added a little girl to the family last fall, and it seems that every year they have a child. Dan's on a team that goes to the World Series. When our oldest grandson was born in Houston, they went to the World Series. When our second grandson was born here with the Rays, Tampa Bay went to the World Series. And now we have a daughter, a granddaughter, born into the family. And so they're due to go to the World Series again, and we're thinking that the granddaughter might be the catalyst to not only winning a pennant, but winning a World Series. And if they win a World Series, then she will truly be the princess of that household. So there is a precedent, and so we'll see what happens.
Well, if Red Sox Nation ever gets a hold of this information, that will become the theme for this coming season. So, it could make its way to Beantown just
this
webcast.
Yeah, well, this little girl's name is Evie, and so it could be the year of Evie.
Maybe that happens to the Red Sox Nation. Well, it would not be a surprise. So the Red Sox have certainly done a great job in the off season, and I got one more question for you that I have to ask, and a lot of people have asked me to ask you this question. Joe Maddon has got this approach of utilizing and mixing up the starting lineup at all times. And there's a lot of criticism for that approach. Now, personally, I don't think you can criticize the approach during the season because he's had great success with it. But there is an argument to be made that when guys are somewhat unsettled or are not in a groove or in a flow, that they're not as prepared for the offseason, or excuse me, for the postseason as they could be. What are your comments about Maddon's approach to mixing and matching and the way that he approaches managing?
Well, you know, you number one, in his defense, you can't quarrel with success, and he's had success with a team and a franchise that had never had success before. He's part of that success. You know, Andrew Friedman has a lot to do with it as well, and the baseball office and the coaching staff and all of that. But, you know, Maddon is a very integral part of the success that they've had. He is a matchup guy. You know, Casey Stengel was a guy who in many ways kind of pioneered the whole platooning, and Joe's taken that to another level. And so you can't fight what he's attempting to do. I think players, being players, being performers, not always do they agree with that approach. Once it comes to the postseason, you know, it's interesting because you will find managers who have been pretty stand pat managers in the postseason, during the regular season, go to the postseason and make some changes that that surprise people. And that's because there's a greater sense of urgency in that postseason than in the regular season. And so, you know, you're going to pull pitchers earlier. You're going to make more pitching changes. I think every manager, almost every manager anyway, is more likely to be more of a matchup guy in the postseason than they are during the regular season. And so in that way, you know, Madden is not any different than what we've seen in a lot of postseason situations. He is a guy who will make a ton of pitching changes and try to match up his lineup as much as he can from night to night, given past history and, you know, who's on the mound. I find it kind of interesting. If you play for him, guys may not always, you know, there's no question. Guys would prefer one spot in the lineup and, you know, one role on their pitching staff. I think they would prefer that. But you can't argue with success, and he
right.
has succeeded where no one else did before.
No doubt. And it's hard to argue with 2 out of 3 American League East Division Championships in the last 2 out of 3 years.
Yeah.
Well, we know that the television ratings are higher than ever in Tampa Bay for the Rays, and our guest is no small part of that, making it entertaining, informative, and a pleasure to watch. How many games you guys got scheduled on Sun Sports and Fox Sports this year?
We're going to do, I think there are 150. There'll be 4 or 5 games in the spring and then 150 during the regular season. And then the networks will fill in with some of those other games. So you're looking at almost every game being televised in one form or another, but at least 150 during the regular season will be on Sun Sports and will be local and regionally televised.
Are you tan and rested and ready to go?
I am pacing myself because I don't want to peak too soon. And so as spring training progresses, I hope that that I will progress toward the goal, and that is to be completely ready for opening day.
We cannot wait. Opening day coming at the end of March here in Tampa Bay. Dwayne, as always, a pleasure. Very much appreciated.
Always great to be with you. It's fun and highly entertaining each time we're together.
Thank you, Ed. Get to Tropicana Field, beautiful humans. We have got to support this team. It's worth supporting. It should be a fun summer in St. Petersburg. Until next time, this is Glenn Klein Online saying, Shalom, everybody.